Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 8 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. My pleasure, as always. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, that's a sign of high intelligence as far as we're concerned. Steve DelBianco is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to have Steve on the show. He's a longtime, very valuable member of our Brain Trust and Vice President of Corporate Affairs at the Association for Competitive Technology. He's also the President of NetChoice, another organization associated with ACT that I like telling people about. And he and his organization have created a brand new report, a brand new important study called National Policies for Platforms as Platforms for Innovation. And he's here to talk about it. Steve, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Jim. It's always great to be here with the Superman of small business. It really is. And whenever you give the intro, gosh, it makes you sound like such a geek, a policy wonk or
something.
Well,
you are.
But remember, for 18 years, I started and ran a real small business company, and that's why I'm doing this now, to help a lot of those small businesses
I don't give you enough credit, Steve, for being – he's exactly right, folks. Steve was an outstanding entrepreneur, an outstanding small business owner, and it's one of the reasons why – and, you know, I guess, Steve, you're exactly right. I'm glad you hauled me up short on this one because I don't give you enough credit for that. I just think of you as being such a superman for technology and innovators. But of course, you know, all the things we talk about are small business technology issues, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And those of us that have signed the front of the paychecks,
yeah,
as you say, have a completely different perspective than people who only sign the back.
Right, and you did that for a long time, and I appreciate that. And I really, we're all better off, folks, because Steve decided to go over to the policy wonk side, and as he said, and your new report, Steve, that you guys have created, you and Braden Cox are the co-authors of this outstanding work. Very important, and it's the kind of thing that benefits all small business owners, whether they know it or not.
It truly does, and it's got a kind of an archaic title, as you said, National Policies as Platforms for Innovation. But I can set that up a little bit and give you a quick summary.
Please.
And the last set of campaigns, congressional campaigns, even state-level campaigns, were full of rhetoric and campaign promises about innovation, how this candidate or that candidate was going to do something about education so that our kids would turn out to be innovators. They were going to fix tax policy. They were going to fix regulatory policy. Now, they even try to justify some Soviet-style centralized planning and industrial policy to drive innovation. But when you really clear away all the rhetoric, you come away with a sense that, yes, innovation matters. It's as American as apple pie, and it's in all of our blood. And politicians and employers and you and I really want to stimulate innovation.
That's right.
And when it comes down to it, you take a look at the kind of policies people come up with, and there's 2 schools of thought. I'll bet few of your readers have heard about this guy, but he's an economic planner named Richard Florida. He's a professor out at Carnegie Mellon.
Right.
His theory is that there are creative cities that kind of foster and cultivate an atmosphere of innovation. That cities like, well, Silicon Valley.
Right, Palo Alto and out in that part of the world.
Right, or Boston or Austin. They have the 3 T's. They have technology, talent, and tolerance, which is an embrace of diverse lifestyle. And he says that that's what attracts the creative class of people. So that the whole secret to innovation is to make your city really attractive, to make it a bohemian enclave that attracts creative people. Now, on the other side of the extreme is Thomas Friedman, whose book I'm sure you've read, The World is Flat.
Mm-hmm.
And Friedman says, quote, in a flat world, you can innovate without having to emigrate.
Mm-hmm.
So you can live anywhere and innovate
successfully. And he's
right about that. Right. So which is right, though? Is the world really flat for innovation? Or does everything happen in these big, spiky areas like Austin and Boston and Palo Alto?
Well, it's not either or, it's both and.
You know, and here's what we said, because that's a great way to slice a dilemma, is to say both, right? We said they're both wrong. We said these guys have both missed it, because it turns out that innovation happens when you have the right mix of national policies. And we identified three specific national policies that are essential for innovation.
Well, what I hear you saying, though, Steve, is that those guys, not that those guys were wrong, I hear you saying that those guys are incomplete.
That's right.
Isn't that really more what you're saying? I know, because it gets more people's attention. I mean, what kind of a wacko would say Thomas Friedman was wrong? Everybody knows the Earth is really flat. But no, but you're right. And the thing is what I think you've done is you've taken what those two guys have said, which a lot of people agree with and believe, and you've finished the story, because there are very important elements to this national policy thing, folks, that you and I could innovate like crazy, but if the government gets in the way, we got a problem. And we're going to talk about that with Steve Del Bianco right after these messages. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. He's John Cougar Mellencamp to take us out.
Well, our hearts be like thunder. I don't know why they don't
Welcome back. It's 17 till. Little Stones for you there. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're rocking and rolling with our good friend Steve Del Bianco. Steve is Vice President with the Association for Competitive Technology. Pound for pound, nobody does more for people like you and me, small business owners. And even though you may say, well, wait a minute, I'm not a technology developer. Well, you may be more than you think. And in the future, you are going to be more than you think. And you certainly want to have access to innovative technologies that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And those companies that will sell you that technology need help. They need to be protected from people who think they know best. And most of those people are politicians. Right, Steve?
Yeah, they know best, right.
Well, yeah, exactly. And one of the things I want to stick in here, though, Steve, something you said a minute ago about innovation. In the United States, the most innovative country on the planet, small businesses create over 55% of all innovation.
Yeah, and over two-thirds of the jobs are small tech firms.
Exactly. And so, but one of the things, Steve, that I've been concerned about for a while, and as you know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit on the show, I've been concerned about some of the antitrust issues that have gone. I'm no big defender of Microsoft, but what happened to Microsoft in the United States, what's happening now to Microsoft in Europe, is, in my opinion, a crime. The things that have been brought against them is a crime, even though Microsoft has some culpability in all that. They weren't exactly, you know, lily white in all that. I think the antitrust laws right today in technology are largely passé. But the other thing, Steve, is I'm worried about protectionism in this country, and that's one of the things you guys talk about.
We do, and it cuts two ways. So let me quickly summarize them. We looked at all the things that governors, mayors, and economic development planners talk about at the local level, state and local level, and we evaluated the kind of policies that happen at a national level. And we picked seven or eight of the key policy areas, things that you would expect, right? Limiting regulation, making it easy to start a business, making it easy to hire and fire workers. And on a lot of these criteria, the U.S. ranks heads and shoulders above the rest of the world. And there's not too much that you can do in a given city to make yourself and differentiate beyond the national laws. Immigration is an example. The national policy in the U.S. determines how we can bring in highly skilled workers from overseas based on the visa program. Well, your city can't do a lot more except maybe cultivate a community of folks that are friendly to that particular nationality. Restaurants, for instance, or neighborhoods and things. But for the most part, cities have to depend upon national policies. And we found three national policies make the biggest difference. The first is the one you just nailed. It's competition regulation, particularly regarding how you integrate products and then merger approvals, too. The second is free trade. And I'm not talking here just about tariffs and quotas. Protectionism, you said protectionism. Protectionism version 2 is upon us, and nations are using procurement preferences, tax policies, standards like in China, and industrial policy as a way to protect their markets from competition. And I have to tell you, our nation had better drop the protectionist scheme as well. Even in my home state of Virginia, there was a bill introduced in the legislature to stop the state from letting a contract to any vendor who was using any overseas staff to help fulfill the contract.
Yeah, that's just so wrong.
That doesn't make any sense to me as a taxpayer in Virginia. And again, what it does is it insulates our domestic companies from the competition they need to keep themselves sharp.
Right. Well, see, that's when you need to give those guys Thomas Friedman's book. That's where he's right.
Yeah, unbelievably, they read the cover of the book and they get scared.
Yeah.
And think the way to stop the world from being flat is to erect protectionist barriers.
Yeah.
Wrong response, Jim. And then the third area is incentives to create and protect intellectual property. Because intellectual property, I'm talking digital music, movies, software, patents and licenses, intellectual property is the only commodity that the U.S. has a trade surplus with every other nation on the planet.
That's right.
As you said, it's the real leader. The U.S. is the leader in innovation, and small business leads the way.
And we're the place that those countries come to steal our stuff. And I had this conversation. I gave a speech on Friday, and somebody asked me about you know, should we were talking about China, and part of the conversation was about China. Somebody mentioned something about China and their weapons. I said, let me tell you something. Forget about China's weapons. The weapons you're talking about, the intercontinental ballistic missiles and their nuclear weapons, you know, we're never going to have a problem with those with China. The problem we have with China is they're stealing our stuff. That's our intellectual property. That's the danger from China, not the weapons.
Unfortunately, they'll steal it just long enough until they start to create their own intellectual property, and then they'll get religion. Then they'll start to care about IP and perhaps even use it as a weapon against us.
Right. When Indonesia starts stealing their stuff, that's when they'll get religion.
That's true.
Yeah.
But today's innovations, things that your listeners and my company, the things that we created have much shorter life cycles than ever before. In other words, a product becomes obsolete very quickly right now. And
that's the reason I said the antitrust laws are passe for this.
You're so right. By the time antitrust laws decide that somebody's got a dominant share or monopoly share of a market, guess what? That market disappears. It's been undercut or replaced by a completely different entry to the market. Mm-hmm. And that means that companies need to take their products to a broader global marketplace, a flat global marketplace, as fast as they can to try to pay back the investment it took to create the product and generate capital for tomorrow's investment mm-hmm. cycle. And so we are calling on Congress, since that's where I work here in Washington, calling on Congress to use America's free trade leverage to try to convince our trading partners to create a better environment for America's innovation.
But we need to get our own religion sometimes. We got people like Schumer and what's his name? Graham. Is it Graham from South Carolina who are becoming protectionists. And those are the guys who scared me in this United States. When we come back, folks, Steve's going to bundle all this up into a nice, neat little package of why this is very important for small business owners. Tintail, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Steve Del Bianco, Vice President of the Association for Competitive Technology. That website is actonline.org. Steve, can we get your report there?
You can. Go to actonline.org, and it's right on the homepage. It's a link to the actual report.
I encourage you, folks, it's plain English, regular stuff. If I can understand it, you can understand it. It's a good report. I encourage you to go and read this. Put it in your collection put it right there. Stick it inside of the World is Flat book.
And I know. Steve. And you know what? And Jim, the audience, your audience understands this stuff. But we wanted to make sure that a congressional audience will understand that for American companies to create jobs and innovation, for particularly small American companies, to do what we do best, Congress had better make sure that when we create innovations, that we have access to foreign markets, we have access to overseas markets, that protectionism doesn't get in the way, and that once our products arrive in that market, that people aren't copying and stealing the intellectual property we created.
Right.
I mean, it could be as simple as that, and yet Congress needs to see the urgency. It's that when we put our sweat and blood into an innovation, that we have got to make that pay off before it becomes obsolete And that's what will generate the money for tomorrow's innovation.
It seems to me, Steve, the problem we got with some parts of the world is they don't have the same ethical background as we do. They don't have the same ethical standards as the West does.
Well, Jim, you know, plenty of us in this country stole a lot of music in the past 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the ethical standards. But the good news is as soon as that Apple figured out a way to let us have the songs for 99 cents, people have flocked to the iTunes and the iPod.
Right.
Unless you're in France, of course. The French government, along with Norway and the Dutch, have decided that that's an antitrust violation.
Hmm.
And they're forcing Apple to saw apart and disintegrate iTunes and iPod. Small companies, though, don't have the kind of lawyers that Apple does, and they might not be able to fight against antitrust and protectionism and piracy that comes overseas. And that's when we turn to our federal government and ask them to go to bat for us.
Well, you've got a lot of small business owners listening right now, Steve, that are saying to themselves, you know what, I'm never going to mass produce and distribute a bunch of intellectual property, but they are going to buy products and technologies that are intellectual property that are going to help them to be more competitive and to be more successful. And so they want those companies they buy from to be able to be healthy and robust and to create the next generation of technologies. So why is all this important to those small businesses?
No, that's an excellent point. It's not just the producer, right? You're saying it's the consumer.
Exactly.
As the consumer, when I use your website, the technologies that are on there were created by companies and made affordable to you because the company knew that it wasn't easy for others to simply steal his idea or that our government, at least, would try to protect the ability of that product to earn a return. No, you're right. You're exactly right. And innovations themselves require the ability to protect it. What did Abraham Lincoln once said? That the patent system adds fuel to the fire of genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I'd like to propose, Steve, is that we all quit worrying about globalization. That's what I tell people when I speak around the country. Globalization is not bad. It's the trade manifestation of our intellectual journey. And globalization is not good or bad. It's just a thing that's been going on for thousands of years. So don't be against it. Don't encourage your politicians to be protectionists.
Better still, if you hear them spouting protectionist rhetoric and trying to stop outsourcing, speak up for the fact that you enjoy getting those goods and services at lower prices, that you're happy for the competition because it makes us stronger,
right,
that we can compete on a global scale.
And stop believing everything that Lou Dobbs says.
Seriously.
Lou Dobbs is dangerous. I say that also.
He's a poison for America's innovative backbone.
That's exactly right. He's the opposite. Lou Dobbs is the opposite of what we need in America, that kind of a voice, because he never takes into consideration the standard of living that we have in the United States as a result of outsourcing globalization.
No, it's absolutely true. And so many states have drank the Kool-Aid from Lou and want to try to live it. The contractors that can service their contracts. And I think that closes the door to competition. It closes the door to a lot of small businesses who will drive their costs down by strategic outsourcing.
Steve, give us the website where we can find this report again, please.
It's at www.actonline.org.
All right. Hey, Steve, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. Well done on this report.
Thank you, Jim, and appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Well, and we'll have you back again because I want to get into this a little bit more. There's more here than we've covered today. Thank you for being here today.
Bye now.
Steve Del Bianco, ladies and gentlemen, with the Association for Competitive Technologies. I got to go right now for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.